I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Bernard Otterman, a Holocaust survivor and the author of Inmate 1818 and Other Stories. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. It's a very musical week in Jewish tradition, which is cause to rejoice. This coming Sabbath in Temple is called Shabbat Shirah, the Sabbath of Song, coming as it does on the week in which we chant the great Song of Moses, the Az Yashir Moshe, in the synagogue. This Torah portion is particularly associated with music, since the Hebrew words for song and poem are essentially the same, shir and shirah. To many scholars, the passage known as the Song of Moses is one of the oldest texts in the Hebrew Bible, making it one of the earliest pieces of religious literature still in use today, and still very relevant as a textual celebration of liberation from servitude. And the delightful fact is that chanting or singing Torah, turning text into music, has been a central aspect of Jewish tradition for 3 millennia and more. And doing so, that is, singing with energy and joy, is the way that we take our theological ideas and raise them to the level of celebration. Perhaps the most important text in this week's Shirat Hayam, the Song of Moses at the Sea, is the Micha Mocha, which asks, "Who is like you, God, among those who are worshipped?" It has been chanted and set to composed music in literally thousands of arrangements over the centuries, and it still inspires new and often beautiful compositions. And so, to play us in this morning, here's a contemporary Micha Mocha, a setting of this best-known text from the Song of Moses at the Sea, for the coming of Shabbat Shirah this weekend. It's by cantors David Propus and Alan Naplin.
Micha Mocha by Limadonai, Micha Mocha Nedar Bakodesh Nora Nora, Nora Tehilo, O Sefele. Micha Mocha by Limadonai, Kamocha nedar b'kodesh nora 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 tehilot o seifele malchutcha ravanecha lokeya yam ifne Moshe zeli zeli anu ve'ameru malchutcha ravanecha lokeya yam ifne Moshe Zeli, Zeli, Anu ve'yameru. Mi kamocha vaelim Adonai, Mi kamocha nedar v'kodesh nora nora, Nora tehilot, O seifeler. Mi kamocha vaelim Adonai, Mi kamocha nedar v'kodesh nora nora, Nora tehilot, O seifeler.
Micha Mocha from this week's Torah portion from the CD Thank God It's Shabbat for the coming Sabbath of Song, Shabbat Shirah, this Friday and Saturday. You know, in preparing for a Sabbath this musical, it would be wrong to use only one play-in this morning. And so on Two Jewish, we are blessed with a second interpretation of this great passage from Torah. In the narrative of the Exodus, we'll read Shabbat Shirah, as dramatized in the movie Exodus, Gods and Kings. Freedom comes as the result of a divine miracle, or a series of miracles, really. Here's a musical take on the subject of miracles from the older animated film The Prince of Egypt, using the words of the Yaz Yashir, the Song of Moses at the Sea.
In this time of fear, when prayer so often proved in vain, hope seemed like the summer birds to swiftly flown away. Yet now I'm standing here. Seeking faith and speaking words I never thought I'd say. There can be miracles when you believe. Though hope is frail, it's hard to keep. Who knows what miracles you can achieve.
Freedom as a Miracle, delivered directly by God, composed by Stephen Schwartz, the Broadway and movie composer, and arranged by Hans Zimmer, the famous film composer. Both, of course, are Jewish, which is not a miracle after all. We have been musically oriented for a very, very, very long time, more or less since we crossed that Egyptian sea. You know, miracles, nisim, are an interesting subject in Judaism. There's a wonderful little quotation ascribed to the founder of Hasidism, the Baal Shem Tov, about miracles. He said, "God fills the world with miracles, but man puts his little hand over his little eyes and sees nothing." So often that's true. It's not clear to me that the Red Sea, or the Sea of Reeds, if you will, was parted by God's miraculous intervention. But it's also not so clear that it matters, because the world is filled with the miraculous, from the glory of the Grand Canyon to the birth of a baby. We just need to figure out that God has put it all there for us to see if we wish. And this week, the Torah pushes us to look into our own lives and find the miracles and the melodies that are already there. Well, this week, in addition to a great Torah portion, we will see an unusual commemoration, very likely the final one of its kind, in a very different and more somber area of Jewish meaning. January 27th, this coming Tuesday, the museum at Auschwitz-Birkenau in Poland will remember the 70th anniversary of the liberation of the largest and most notorious death factory in human history, Auschwitz, more accurately the complex known as Auschwitz-Birkenau, was the concentration camp, the gas chambers, and the crematoria responsible for the murder of between 1.1 and 1.6 million Jews by the Nazis. The camp was liberated by Soviet Red Army units January 27, 1945. And at this 70th anniversary event coming on Tuesday, I will be there in person, by the way, there will be survivors present for likely the final time at one of the 10-year anniversaries of liberation. Very few children survived Auschwitz, after all, and the current generation of survivors are mostly in their late 80s and 90s. One of those survivors has written a powerful book of short stories that explore the experience and meaning of surviving Auschwitz in a fictional way. Meet Bernard Otterman, a fascinating man and an excellent writer, when we return in a few moments here on Too Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through 8th grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquagaki Tribe.
We welcome it to Jewish this morning. Our guest, Dr. Bernard Otterman, was born in Lodz, Poland in 1937, a survivor of the Holocaust. At the age of 3, he and his parents escaped Lodz and fled to Warsaw, moving from ghetto to ghetto, only to be interned in several labor camps. Separated from his father, Bernard and his mother escaped the train line headed for Auschwitz, fled, and hid for 6 months as fugitives in the Polish countryside, until Russian troops liberated Poland in January 1945. It's an extraordinary story. He has a book now, Inmate 1818 and Other Stories. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Good morning.
So what prompted you to write these stories, which are, you know, fictional stories, but based, I'm sure, in your deep personal experience?
Well, it's true. They are fiction. In a sense, what we usually refer to literary fiction. So they're not a memoir. The book is not a memoir, because obviously I was 3 years old when the war broke out, as you mentioned, 5 when I entered my first camp and liberated when I was 8. So I was not in a position to write a memoir about my own heroism. And prior to writing this book, I had been writing poetry, and it's a natural progression for many writers to move from poetry to short stories to novels, and that's what I'm working on now, is a novel. And so I wanted to share and my understanding and my outrage about the Holocaust with readers, and I decided to do this in a short story collection form.
You know, maybe the most fascinating story for me, the first one in the collection, The Golem of Auschwitz. Explain a little bit about how the idea for that story came about.
I'd be glad to. The idea of a golem occurs in Jewish mysticism, frequently, And the story originally, the original Golem, was one that originated in Prague in the 16th century, where a local rabbi built an artificial man to guard the Jewish people for pogrom. And he achieved his goal. When I thought of this myth, I thought, what would happen if a golem had been built in Auschwitz? Could he have saved the Jews from extermination? Could he have ruined the gas chambers and the crematoriums? I wanted to construct answer that question. At the same time, I wanted to highlight some of the conditions in Auschwitz, particularly the blowing up of the crematorium 4 by the Sonderkommando in October of 1944, and the revolt that resulted of this action. So I invented a scenario in which two individuals, and I'll go into it in a minute, created the golem, and what happened after the golem was created.
We will talk about that and much more. By the way, we're commemorating the 70th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz-Birkenau quite soon. Anyway, we will talk much more with our guest, Bernard Otterman, and his book, Inmate 18 and Other Stories, when we come back in just a moment on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We welcome Pam and David of Freedom Smoke. So your product, a smokeless way to get off of tobacco, people don't really understand exactly what's wrong with cigarettes, or they think it's the same thing that's wrong with your product. Can you explain the difference?
That's true, Rabbi Kohan. Part of it is the cigarettes themselves, the FDA made them release the ingredients. There's over 3,000 ingredients in cigarettes. There's 4 ingredients in electronic cigarettes. Propylene glycol, vegetable glycerin, flavorings from Flavor Art in Italy, who is who we use, and nicotine itself. Our nicotine is USP hospital grade. It's the finest that you can purchase. Nicotine in and of itself is not harmful to the human body. That's why we have so many doctors referring patients that they just cannot get to quit smoking cigarettes. They send them to us for a much healthier alternative.
And where do people go and how do they find your stuff?
They can go to one of our 3 stores here in Tucson. We've got one at Orange Grove and River, one at Broadway and Swan, and one at 12th and Valencia. Or they can go online to freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thanks very much, and we'll talk next week.
Thank
Always
you.
A pleasure.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's twojewishradio18@gmail. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us from there or at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. On this week, when we chant the great Az Yashir, the original Song of Redemption, we have a great reggae hero, Bob Marley, and his classic Redemption song to interpret it for us.
Old pirates, yes, they rabbi, sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit. But my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty.
we forward in this generation, triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our mind. Oh, have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop at the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Yes, some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs. All I ever have, redemption songs. These songs of freedom, songs of freedom.
That was Bob Marley's Redemption Song for the week, in which we read of the crossing of the sea and the first great redemption in the Torah portion of B'Shalach. It's time now for the recurring, inscrutably irregular feature of Two Jewish, Wisdom from Zen Judaism. Breathe in. Breathe out. Breathe in. Breathe out. Forget this, and attaining enlightenment will be the least of your problems. And wherever you go, there you are. Your luggage is another story. Those were words of eternal wisdom from Zen Judaism. When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Hi, I'm Ben. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can help provide a Jewish education to families at no cost to you by redirecting your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. You can help make Jewish education affordable.
Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. This lets JETCO give scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Congregation Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K through 8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction or donation. When you give to JETCO, you get 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income taxes are reduced by the exact amount you've given. Supporters of JETCO can give up to $1,053 for a single filer or $2,106 for a married couple filing jointly and get that whole amount back from state income tax.
Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442. Or you can go to JETCO.org.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. As Abe is walking down the street, he is accosted by a schnorrer, a beggar. "Please, can you give me $5? Says the schnorrer. "Why should I?" says Abe. "Because I need to buy a cup of coffee," says the schnorrer. "But a cup of coffee is a buck." "I know," says the schnorrer, "but I'm a big tipper." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well and tip well. And now a word of Torah. Journeys are centrally important to Judaism. The act of leaving and heading out into the great unknown is crucial for us. At some level, the proper theme song for Jews ought to be "On the Road Again," I think. Repeatedly in Jewish tradition, great leaders, or even the whole of our people, have headed out into the wilderness to seek God and make a new life somewhere else. It first happened with Abraham in the Torah portion of Lech Lecha. It happens two generations later with Jacob, whose name is changed to Israel, and he is in most ways the founder of our people. And it happens again with Moses, who flees his country of birth in Egypt to find God in the Sinai, and then leaves there to go back to Egypt and finally takes the whole people of Israel out of slavery in this week's portion and puts them on the path of redemption and freedom. And it keeps happening throughout Jewish history. The idea of the wandering Jew has ideological relevance as well as pathos. Wandering seems to be something we need to do, not just something we are forced to do. In particular, Jewish religious tradition has a peculiar perspective on the events of the Exodus, which reach a climax in this week's Torah portion of Beshalach. It's true that the drama of Jewish history really begins with the story of the Exodus from Egypt and the escape from Pharaoh on the shore of the Sea of Reeds, and it's logical that we focus on that. But in our prayers, practices, and traditions, we raise up the escape from slavery and heading out into the Sinai wilderness to the highest conceivable historical status, far beyond what might be appropriate. It's not just the way we make Passover a central holiday. That's well and good. A festival of freedom should be focally important for a people dedicated to justice. But we remind ourselves of this Exodus far more often than Pesach. Every single Friday night when we say Kiddush, we declare that we observe the Sabbath, Zecher Letziat Mitzrayim, in remembrance of the Exodus from Egypt. which is scarcely true, since according to our own Torah, the Shabbat goes back to God's creation of the world, long before the Exodus. We focus on this great narrative and its denouement in nearly obsessive ways, again and again, in liturgy, in our studies. Why? Perhaps because, in effect, our central Jewish story is about transition, travel, hitting the road. It's a core narrative for Judaism. To paraphrase Descartes, we left, therefore we are. Our essential nature as a people was formed by the Exodus. When we find ourselves in slavery, either physical, psychological, or moral slavery, we must, as Jews, choose to leave. And seeing how our ancestors did it, against all odds, and sought to find a new life of ethical freedom and covenant with God, can inspire us still today. You know, I always associate this portion with America's promise of freedom and justice. For our Jewish poetry slam this morning, we have thus chosen Emma Lazarus' famous stanzas, dedicated to and inscribed on the Statue of Liberty in New York's harbor. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land, here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor the twin cities frame. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore, send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. The words on the Statue of Liberty, the poem penned by Emma Lazarus, a Sephardic Jew of America. There is no more memorable statement of the American dream than the promise of safe haven and a fair shake to people who have known only oppression. And there is no better embrace of the promise of exodus and freedom, of liberation and redemption, than that given in this week's Torah portion of B'Shalach. When we return in a moment here on Two Jewish, our guest Bernard Otterman will explain just why he chose to write fictional stories about the very real places and events of the Holocaust and the experience of the survivors. Find out when we return in a few moments here on Two Jewish.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from our guest, Rabbi Sandy Seltzer.
The Council of the European Union, which is an advisory body, has announced that it will again try to have Hamas listed as a terrorist organization, a designation which, for unexplained reasons, was dropped in late December of this past year. In other news from Europe, British Home Secretary Theresa May, in the wake of the recent terrorist attacks in France, which took the lives of 17 persons, and the increasing number of French Jews leaving for Israel, declared, and I quote, "I never thought I would see the day when members of the Jewish community in Great Britain would be afraid to live here. Britain without Jews," she added, "would not be Britain, just as without Sheikhs, Muslims, and Hindus, it would not be Britain." And in Israel, in a radical departure from Israeli politics, the first ever political party for ultra-Orthodox women has been established in anticipation of Israeli elections to be held in March. It is called in Hebrew Bizchutan, which loosely translated means women making changes. And in this country, Rabbis for Human Rights, a group consisting of rabbis from all branches of Judaism, has issued a statement calling upon the entire American religious community to stand together in behalf of unarmed black victims killed in encounters with police and incidents from Ferguson, Missouri to Cleveland, Ohio. In other news, Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, has cautioned the Palestinian Authority not to go through with its declared intention to bring allegations of war crimes in Gaza against Israel before the International Criminal Court. Doing so, the senator warned, would result in its losing financial American aid, which is quite substantial. And finally, the Council of Presidents of Major Jewish Organizations is now making changes in its bylaws regarding how new members are to be elected. The changes are a result of the controversy following its failure to admit J Street to membership last year and the threat of liberal groups such as Reform Judaism to leave the council unless changes were made in the electoral process, which were less arbitrary and far more equitable when it came to admitting new members. And that's the two Jewish news of Jews around the world.
We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Dr. Bernard Otterman is a Holocaust survivor who survived as a young child, born in Lodz, Poland in 1937. At the end of the war, he was just 8 years old, but his new book is not really a memoir, but an exploration in some really remarkable short stories of the experience of the Holocaust and its ongoing pain. Dr. Otterman trained in engineering, has a PhD in the natural sciences. He was on the engineering faculty at Northeastern and Hofstra University. He's been working on this book for, perhaps a decade in the making. We started to talk about your story, The Golem of Auschwitz. I've always wondered why nobody put the story of a golem together with the Holocaust in a kind of literary way. It seems like a natural. Why didn't the Jews create a golem to defend themselves against the Nazis?
Well, that was exactly my inspiration also. Once the golem came to mind, I thought nobody had done that, and I did. What I did is I found in my imagination two individuals, a man, a doctor, a scientist, like myself, except a medical doctor, and a very religious Jewish man, the son of a rabbi. In the beginning, there was this conflict between these two individuals, whether or not you can, should create a golem. And eventually, the secular doctor creates... convinces the religious rabbi's son to create the golem, and they do.
You know, the process is really remarkable because, you know, how can anybody create anything in Auschwitz? Talk a little bit about how the story plays out.
Well, the original golem of Prague,
of course,
was created out of clay. Now, in Auschwitz, obviously, there was no clay. But clay is basically water and sand. So the idea was the materials that they used, the doctor, the medical doctor, and the rabbi's son, was ashes from the crematorium and water. They mixed those two together, formed a figure on a piece of plywood. The doctor formed the figure with the seven. The seven important elements of a golem: legs, arms, head, penis, and then the rabbi's son read the proper Kabbalistic prayers and incantations, and brought this
golem to life.
This golem to life, correct.
You know, the story of the golem is a fascinating story. It's not, and the concept of the golem is one that protects the Jewish people at times of tragedy or danger or persecution or slaughter. That's the origination of the story. And the golem of Prague, of course, is the most famous one, but there's golems of Warsaw. There's, you know, your native area, actually, as well. There are other golem stories. At the end of the golem story, always, there's the reminder that it's a dangerous thing to mess with nature in this way, and the golem has to be destroyed. How did you find it integrating that into your story?
Well, I did not follow that route. I created my golem. The golem, I gave him, I had to bring him up. I had to make him learn about the camp and about Judaism, about the Jewish religion. So the golem is within, let's say, 2 weeks. He's an individual. He walks. He talks. He knows the Talmud. He knows the situation in Auschwitz. Then he's smuggled into the Sonderkommando, and according to my interpretation, encourages those women who brought, who smuggled in the black powder
that blew up
the gunpowder from the factory,
right,
where they worked, into the crematorium, and the Sonderkommando in October of 1944, which is a historical fact, blows up the crematorium. Afterwards, the golem does not perish in my story. He disappears. He disappears east, and when the story resumes again, he's now the doctor. The war is over. Unfortunately, Chaim, the religious rabbi's son, has died.
Yeah, he dies of strep throat, actually, in the story.
Doctor Israel,
right.
And I resume the story at that point, and I can go into some details if you want me to.
No, that's okay. It's a
Israel.
It's a fascinating concept, and you know, you should share the name of the golem as well, Tikva.
Yes, the golem is called Tikva, which in Hebrew, which is translated,
hope.
Means hope.
Right.
So, should I continue?
No, it's okay. I wanted to go on to some of the other stories because they're all interesting, and they all deal in one way or another with the process of the Holocaust and of survival. Tell us what it was like looking back at this. You know, you were a child at the end of the war. Looking back at these experiences after so many years, do you feel them intensely again? Are they relevant, or are you mostly going from other people's experiences and thoughts?
No, I'm going from my own experience and thoughts, and as well as others. Frankly, you know, after liberation and you being united with my father, coming to America, I was always obviously familiar with my own personal story. But it was only in my, actually, 30s when our temple here on Long Island decided that the Holocaust ought to be taught in the high school curriculum, that I started studying intensely the Holocaust, and I became acquainted with the wider aspect of the Holocaust, the horror of the buses which transported that went from Lodz to Helmo and gassed the Jews on the way, the many details of Auschwitz, the many details of Treblinka, where it took 40 minutes to asphyxiate the Jews because a diesel engine was used to pump the deadly fumes into the gas chambers. So I learned all of that in my 30s, and it was then that the full horror of the Holocaust hit me personally. And so in addition to certain traumatic events, which I'm not going personal traumatic events, which I suffered in a camp, but I'm not going to describe, I now had the big picture of the Holocaust, the terrible tortures of Auschwitz, the medical experiments, etc. And it was also pretty much at that time that I started writing poetry, and obviously an important subject like that appears as in my poetry as well as in my short stories.
You know, in this collection of short stories, some of them, many of them sort of verge on magic realism. The story Black Grass is very interesting. Tell us a little bit about how you came up with that idea.
Right. Black Grass is actually the last poem that I wrote, in a sense. Because one day I was trying to write this, the phrase Black Grass came to mind. And I was in my poetry writing phase. And I tried to write a poem, you know, and tried to interpret Black Grass in terms of the Holocaust. And no matter what I tried, usually it took a couple of weeks, two or three, to write a decent poem. But this time there was just no way of starting it. Yes, but there was just no way of concluding the poem. So I thought, well, this must be more than a poem. This must be a bigger piece. This must be a short story. And I thought, what it is, once you've read it, is basically a summary of the entire Holocaust. And it's entire Holocaust. And it starts out by one spring morning, black grass begins to grow within an abandoned camp, and then it grows in bigger and bigger circles around the camp itself, and how the local population in some Eastern European country reacts to that, and how they try to cope with it, and the consequences of what happens when they try to cope with it. They get the black grass illness, which gives them black spots. The cows, which graze on the grass, give black milk. The chickens begin to lay black eggs, and nobody wants to buy black eggs. And the disease is referred to as the Jewish pox, and it even has political implication in that. In that country, and it's used as the plague of black grass, and the few Jews that are remaining are used once again as scapegoats by the political establishment, and then they establish the process is repeated, except that this time it's perpetrated on the local population for political reasons, and the political eventually a certain percentage of the political population is exterminated, eliminated, and assigned in a camp, and there's a huge chimney built in the camp, in which the smoke travels downwind, and from the crematorium of these dead people, not Jews, but the local population,
mm-hmm.
and the black smoke contaminates and causes continued black rats to develop, which implies that there's no way one can forget or eliminate the Holocaust.
You know, I thought of Paul Celan's famous poem, Todesfugue, Black Milk of Daybreak, I Drink It at Morning, kind of playing on that same painful theme. A beautiful book, Inmate 1818 and Other Stories by Dr. Bernard Otterman. Where can people go to find out more about the book?
The book is available at Amazon for sale and also at my own website, www.bernardotterman.com. Bernard is spelled B-E-R-N-A-R-D, Otterman, OTTERMAN.com. BernardOtterman.com.
Thank you very much for a great visit here on Too Jewish. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical playout.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470. Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be Rabbi Rachel Mikva, the 2015 Bill Gray Lectureship Scholar. She'll be here February 5th at the University of Arizona and February 6th and 7th at Temple Emmanuel discussing dangerous religious ideas. Call 327-4501 for more information on these free programs open to everyone through Temple Emmanuel. Our playout this morning comes from Israeli singer Rona Kanan, her lovely song, Einayim Zarot, Through Foreign Eyes. My friends, may you be blessed with a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
לא ראיתי כלום עיניים זרות איבדו נתונים ניסיתי להפוך את אורי אבל האור שבפנים דמה מדי לשלי רציתי להדוף את השנים שעומדות בינינו להבין שאין כלי נשק בעולם שרק מתוקף אהבתי יכריע את הזמן אני לא אפסיק לרצות אני לא אפסיק לרצות אני לא אכנע לרעיון הזה שאי אפשר, כי אי אפשר ואי אפשר זה עניין של הישרדות גם אם תגידי לי שדי כבר